All right. It sounds like we're officially live. Like, if you're wondering what happened to the True Wealth Show, it has not stopped.
It's just a live show, and live shows have hiccups.
It's how we roll sometimes. So welcome to the best Tuesday you've had all week. We're going to try the intro all over again without the cracking voice. Because
you missed it. It was awesome.
For the most part, puberty ended a while ago.
That sounded like a smoker's cough. That was awesome. I get these like long drawn out coughs every once in a while. I'm like, wow.
I'm gonna end up doing some kind of raspy.
I know, right?
Pardon me.
Oh, there it goes.
So I don't know what the story is. Anyway,
allergy season.
Lots of seasons, right? And
COVID season, allergy season, pick a season.
Cocktail is now they're coming out with the COVID and flu combo test.
What?
Oh yeah. Pretty soon, I'm waiting for there to be, just mark these investment words, right? You remember there's a gal that's being sued over, she created like a blood test protocol and so forth, it blew a company up, it was genetic testing and so forth. This wasn't like a 23andMe thing, but still, and now she's been accused of fraud.
Oh,
and so they're going
goodness.
Through the whole mess. So I'm waiting for folks to say, oh, well, we got all these different tests that you can take and hoopla hoopla, right?
I saw a weird one on Facebook.
I'm like, we're so in the weeds
so
already.
So in the weeds already. Hey, guess what? I hope you brought your weed whacker and your lawnmower because we're going to get into the weeds on a bunch of different topics today.
Yeah, that'll be used in a future radio clip. So, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, as you know, I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn, in studio as pretty much always.
It's Katie Shook.
Right, but we've also got a special guest today who's joining us. Super sophisticated individual. Probably one of the best math teachers we've had in studio all day.
is
so
Matt
thank
Dixon.
You yeah Matt Dixon joining the show today, thanks. And this is just, it's kind of an interesting one, right? For a number of reasons. We're going to keep some of that a mystery to our
Ooh,
listeners, okay?
So I like mysteries.
There's mystery, but we did want to ask Matt to join us. First of all, Matt is going to play a little bit of a role today on the program for us.
Yeah,
just a little bit of a one?
Right. It's the one that you get to ask. When I say something that doesn't make any sense, you have to say, whoa, what?
But then I'd be talking the whole show.
Wow. Wait, where's the...
I know.
Oh, see, we need the soundboard.
Oh,
he's going to fit right in.
Got it.
So... anyhow, today, if you all are just tuning in, right, you should actually go check out podcasts, because last week we had a show where we were covering real estate.
Okay? Which we do on and off from time to time.
We do, but it's not been a major topical focus for us because as financial planners, we talk a lot about planning. We talk about entrepreneurship. We talk about structuring. We talk about the investment markets a lot. But investments oftentimes is stocks, bonds, and sort of the
well, because that's the kind of investments we wield.
That's the stuff that typically falls in our wheelhouse.
Okay.
But investing is a spectrum of different opportunity sets, right? And real estate is a really important one.
Yes.
So, first of all,
it is a quiver, or was it arrow in the quiver?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. I have like a frog in my throat. I'm going to chase this thing the whole darn show.
Do you have
I?
Some water? Are you underwater?
It feels like it. So I'm
if you start riveting or something, you know, we're going to. I hate when you get that like tickle and you just, it won't go away.
I hope I just muted the correct microphone. So
you turned me off on purpose. You know you did.
You're like, did Katie just get silent while Dave cleared his throat?
Okay. Yes. Yes.
So here's what we're going to talk a little bit about real estate-wise today. And this is going to be relevant to lots of different types of investments. Okay, so it's going to stocks and bonds are going to be appropriate in this discussion, but it's really going to center around real estate a lot.
Okay.
And that's because there have been some proposed tax changes, and these changes will have a potential effect on the real estate market, but some of these changes will affect lots of different investments, okay? So one of the biggest proposals out there right now is a change in the capital gains rate.
Okay? So are they trying to make it better or worse?
That is a subjective question.
Right? Okay. So what
better
are they trying?
For whom?
Yeah. For whom? So what are
the
they
IRS
trying?
Thinks it's better.
Perspective is key.
Indeed.
Okay, change in the tax. So how are they changing the tax code or tax rate?
So the proposal right now, and let me keep this at the forefront for all of our listeners, okay? Proposals are very political in nature, okay? That is about appealing to a group of people. There's a lot of, if you've ever heard of like classes in college around political science, okay, this is a classic example of triangulating around opinions. So you throw an idea out there with the understanding that that idea is not going to be the final version. It's going to be the way that you appeal to a specific group of people, and you're also going to anger a different group. Okay, and then you're going to allow people to go through a negotiation process. By the way, this is a really normal technique. Okay, if you've ever been caught in a negotiation, one of the things that a savvy person will do is they will make an outrageous offer to you.
Wasn't that like the whole Trump thing? Like Trump would just go like high in the sky
in
because
the art
he knew
of the deal. That's part of it, right? But you make a really outrageous deal, and people go, "Well, that's just ridiculous." And so you go, "Well, then what about this?" And they go, "Well, finally, you're reaching reality." And now the negotiation begins. But you've recalibrated where somebody's thinking on an issue by picking a really extreme point and then jarring their thinking and then renegotiating back to something that everybody will think is more reasonable, but maybe closer to what you had always intended.
Ah.
Okay, so this is a political strategy. Now, what has been proposed is a change of capital gains rates to make all of them the same as income tax rates. So capital gains rate of, they want to raise it to 39%.
Okay.
Okay. And keep in mind, what is a capital gain, first off?
Well, and there's two different kinds. So a capital...
Well, there's two different lengths.
Right.
A capital gain is a capital gain.
Long-term,
is a capital...
Term.
Correct. Yeah. It's holding period, right?
Right.
Capital gains are profits.
Right.
Okay. And remember, profits are different than a dividend payment.
Right. They're different than income.
Profits are different than earnings.
Right.
Okay. Profits are if you buy something for one value and sell it for a higher value, the difference between what you purchased it for and what you sold it for is a gain. That gain is compared to a holding period. Is it less than 1 year? Or longer than 1 year.
And by the way, to clarify, it's not a calendar year. It's 365 days. Like, because some people will say, like, oh, I bought it in January and I sold it in December. But, like, if you bought it January 5th and sold it the fall.
If the radio listeners could have seen my...
Oh my gosh, he totally rolled his
radio.
Eyes at me. Like you all heard the eye roll.
How many people out there believe, like, if I buy this in December of this year, it will be a long-term capital gain in January? And if you believe that, I would go, you're terribly misinformed, and I can think of other more insulting things to call you.
Well, thank you for that. And we know our listeners are smarter than
exactly.
that. But I like to clarify.
Our listeners already nailed it, so that's good.
Well, that was not what I was saying.
I know you're
David,
not. I'm
but,
just chuckling when
but
you're
there's
like,
times-
calendar year as opposed to 12, or as opposed to 365 days. I'm like, the years a year.
Okay, but even then, sometimes people in their mind will do short term.
It's okay, my voice cracked earlier.
I know. I was making fun of him. If you bought it January 5th and then like sold it January 3rd the following year, like sometimes they're like, well, I bought it in January and I can sell it in January.
Yeah, no, it's actually 366 days.
Well, that's kind of my point.
Correct,
is sometimes
correct.
We do mental accounting in ways where we're like, oh no, it's yeah. been long enough, and it actually hasn't. So
and,
the exact amount of days is important. Was
yeah,
my
she's,
point.
And Katie
thank
is
you for
absolutely
that.
Absolutely correct.
All right, I'll get a half a point for that one.
Yeah,
okay,
it's a good save. It was kind of out of the
whatever
fire,
quarter of
into
a point. Fine.
Pan.
Okay. Anyway. Moving on. But no, if you're new to investing, you may not understand that there's a difference between short-term and long-term
right.
capital gains, and they are important.
But it's there's lots of different types of income. We have discussed this on this program before, although it's been a while.
Okay? And we'll discuss them again because yeah. we
but,
get new
but
listeners.
But for
all
our
the
listeners,
time.
I say taxes are terribly misunderstood in this country, and just like the technique I just described of throw out something outlandish with the intention of negotiating to something more reasonable, that's a strategy. Well, one of the things that is really easy to dupe voters with is to just say, well, it's not fair, and somebody else, some other label group, should do more, right? It's a good way to say, well, it's not going to be my problem it's going to be somebody else's problem, and I don't like that other group, so I'm okay having them be the ones to fix it. Most notably, it's saying, let's tax the rich their fair share. All of those terms, with the exception of tax, are subjective.
Right.
Right? What is rich? What is fair? What is the fair share? How much is more? And like all of those, it's like you realize if you're just sitting, if your instinct was to say, heck yeah, we should do that, then I would say danger, right? Because you're in the emotion land and you're really easy to manipulate.
Well, we've talked about what is your measuring stick, right? How are you measuring this? And we did a whole episode on like, how are you measuring things? Like, I don't consider myself rich at all. But being a foster parent, there was times when I know compared to some of the kids that maybe that I fostered, their parents are like, oh my gosh, she's so rich. And I don't feel rich at all.
Yeah. It's clearly a subjective spectrum.
Very.
Okay? At some point, the lion's share of us will say, look, if you are in the 1% or the top 0.1%, you're at elite level wealth. It's hard to say, okay, you're not ultra rich. I mean, at some point when you're like, how big is my second yacht? Okay, you're rich. We're over that.
My
I get it.
Yacht. I need a baby yacht for the big one.
Right.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So there you go. The larger point here is that the subjective terms are things we need to be careful about, because guess what? The reason that here's another one of my favorites. Now, Warren Buffett, one of the world's wealthiest men. Okay.
Right.
And it was the founder and chairperson of Berkshire
Hathaway.
Centibillionaire. Yes, over $100 billion net worth. And Warren Buffett people say he pays lower taxes than his secretary or whatever the term is that is being
personal
used
now. Assistant.
That's probably what is appropriate now. But
administrative assistant.
It's whatever it is, he has administrative personnel and they pay more tax than him. You know what that statement is? It's what I'll tell you, but we'll take a break, okay? We'll do that, and then, oh gosh, I don't even know if the headphones are. You know what? I'm going to assume that the break is working.
Okay.
And we're going to take that break. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you why your whole thing about Warren Buffett and his assistant and the taxes, why it's just totally screwed up. But we got to take the break first. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shuck.
And
Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. In studio with me today is
Katie Shuck
and
Matt Dixon.
Okay, and we're having a good time. If you're just joining us, check out the podcast at littlejohnfs.com and you can get caught up. We talked last week about real estate on a lot of different levels. Today, we're continuing that conversation, but at the break, we were getting into an issue where people sort of they oftentimes get manipulated around understanding the different types of tax. And the question was, between Warren Buffett, one of the world's richest men, and administrative personnel that work for Warren Buffett, the rumor is that his staff pay more taxes than he does. And the question is that true?
Well, I mean, if we knew their tax returns. Well, it's how they get paid, though.
Yeah. So the answer is no, it is not true. All right. On an absolute basis, Warren Buffett pays way more taxes than most all of his staff combined. Now, he's a bazillionaire. But now the question is, well, somebody will say, well, but the percentage, is he paying his fair share? And it would say, well, here's the issue. Warren Buffett doesn't take a big salary as a CEO and make buco bucks there. He's a giant shareholder in the investments that he owns. So he gets paid in the form of dividends or capital gains, which are taxed more favorably. They're taxed at a lower rate than income tax. Now, he has lots of dividend checks and lots of capital gains to deal with. But that tax rate's 20% at the maximum level currently, at least as I understand the tax code. So if you're going to go, you know, nerd check me on that. But if that's the case and the top income tax bracket, which is slated to go higher, but is currently 37%, which means that's 17% higher. right? The income taxes are higher. So you could say, well, the percentage they're paying is higher. And you go, well, yeah, because the type of income they're receiving, the type of revenue that's coming in, and what they're is taxed differently. So when somebody just says, well, taxes need to be more fair, I go, well, careful. Because here's why real estate and taxes matter. I had to tell you all that story to get to this one. And Matt, this is where you're going to start having fun with us.
Ah, okay, I'm ready for it.
So, because again, Matt's a numbers guy. And Katie, you're kind of a numbers gal.
I like numbers.
Yeah.
They're my friend.
I mean, she does.
I watch the Sesame Street show once in a while.
Yes. And I like to count. So as we...
Thank you very much for that one. David gets a point.
So as I want to talk about, first of all, how do taxes impact real estate? And it affects real estate and investment just like stocks, right? If you are currently told by the government, if you hold something for more than a year, we're going to drop your tax rate from 37% to 20% or lower, right? And keep in mind, income tax is different than a capital gain, right? Income tax, the more money you make, the more your rate goes up.
Right.
But a capital gain, it also is currently indexed, if you will. So it's progressive. If you make zero, a capital gain, you could have no tax or 10%, 15%, or 20%, depending on your income levels. We're not going to go into what those are. I don't want to distract you.
It's not important for today's show.
Is this a lead up to purchasing power risk?
It's not so much a purchasing power risk, but it's a lead up to how much do you keep after, right?
Gotcha.
It's the net versus gross return.
Well, and how the taxes are structured is trying to incentivize people to do one thing or another, right?
Like it's a behavior thing that the government wanted. We don't necessarily want people flipping real estate every 3 months. But guess what? We can do that if it's going to be the same tax whether you hold it for 3 months or 3 years.
Right. So the incentive for holding it longer is now they're trying to take that away.
Well, if the proposal as currently stated were to go through, that would be the case.
Right.
But let's think about what this means to you as a real estate investor. If you knew that buying an asset that you could count on having to give up, let's keep the math easy, let's just call it 40%.
Okay.
That 40% of your profits were going to be given to the government. How's that going to affect your willingness to buy something in the first place?
You're not going to be as willing to buy it.
It's going to change the comparison to other investment types.
Right. Well, and it may not necessarily defer your purchasing, but if you were planning on holding it short term, that could defer it. Like, I mean, if you were planning on buying it and holding it for a while and it made sense still for rental income, you may still go through with the deal.
What I will tell you is that your total return on investment is going to change, which means it changes the value of the investment.
Right.
So you might look to put your money elsewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, and the other thing is, it changes to a certain extent, even when you think about the collateral. If it changes the value of something, then it can change the collateral. And there is a connected effect to the banking system, right? And so all of these things end up being an issue. And here's where real estate investors in particular are concerned. There are some ways to mitigate capital gains. One of the things that is available, and this is a more sophisticated strategy, is if you sell real estate that you have a profit in and it's not a residence, okay, so your primary residence is different, okay? But if you're an investor in real estate and you sell it, you can exchange into other real estate if you follow certain rules. It's called a 1031 exchange, and that's the tax code. Right?
I want to clarify something. You said if it's not a residence, if it's not your personal residence, it can be a rental that is a residence. You just said if it's a residence.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just clarifying.
We can clarify.
It can't be your personal residence. Like, you can own a home that you rent to other people.
All right, whatever.
Sorry.
She's right.
I'm clarifying.
She's not wrong about it. We're clarifying here. So
people are like, what?
So regardless, you know, your primary residence, right? It can't be your primary residence, and it can't be a personal residence.
Right.
Okay. But you could exchange it potentially. And what you could do is defer those taxes. It's kind of like when you put something in an IRA.
Right.
Right. You don't pay the taxes until you take it out.
Right.
So you can defer the tax on real estate by exchanging into other real estate. And this is very popular because now I'm going to tie in another tax. So there's three relevant taxes here. And this is part of a more sophisticated strategy for financial planning and tax management. But our listeners are smart. They're going to get this. There's the capital gain,
right?
Long versus short term. The discussion is, what if we got rid of short term? It would change behavior. Then there's the exchange. You don't want to pay the tax. You exchange into something else. Finally, there is how it is handled when you die. Okay, not a real fun topic to think about, but when you die, your heirs, the way the tax law currently exists, receive what you owned with a step up in basis, meaning they no longer inherit it at the value that you purchased it for. They inherit it as if they were buying it the date that you die. So if that's the case, it's like a reset on taxes, right? All the profits disappear because the original purchase price disappears, and now there's a new purchase price. So the tax proposal right now is get rid of short-term capital gains, make everything higher.
Long-term capital gains.
Make everything short-term capital gain. Make it the same as income tax. So no more difference between capital gains and income. Get rid of the 1031 exchange option entirely. Also eliminate the step-up in basis for your estate, which means heirs would have to pay the tax on any real estate they inherit when it's sold. And they still want to keep the death tax in place too.
Gosh.
This is an extremely aggressive tax proposal.
So they're eliminating tons of the incentives.
It would functionally change the behavior of investors in real estate, which would materially impact the supply and demand curve of real estate.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. So if you look at all the... Now, is it likely to happen? My guess is no. And here's part of why. I think that a lot of the people making decisions benefit from these decisions. So first of all, it's hard to get people
like
that
why would you vote against yourself, or why would you purposely cause more damage?
So
for yourself?
I think there's some of that going on.
Okay.
Second, it usually just means that when the government creates changes, they close one door and they open another. So it just means that the planning is going to become different and more sophisticated. Okay. Third, the proposals are probably more moderate than that. Here, shall we play Prediction Land?
Let's play this one. Okay. All right.
So, Matt, I'm going to ask the question, then you can ask it back. So the proposal right now, let's just talk about the capital gains tax first.
Yeah.
What do you think would be a compromise between what currently exists, long and short term are different, and the proposal, which is make everything short term and make the maximum tax and make it all income tax rate?
The proposal. Put me on the spot here.
Yeah, it's so.
Okay, can I buzz in?
Yeah.
I'm gonna buzz in. We're gonna
brainstorm. Brainstorm.
Can we play Jeopardy? I got it. I think what they'll do is they'll increase the percentage that long term, because right now long term capital gains are the percentage is lower than short term. So I think what they'll do is they'll increase it, but maybe not all the way to where short term capital gains is.
Yeah.
So I think they'll keep the long term capital gain, but it won't be at the same discount that it is now.
I will go even bolder than that.
Okay.
I think not only will they do what you just described, but I think they will index and they'll essentially create another tier of capital gains, and they'll link it to either the size of the gain or the person's income. Because right now the attraction is if you make lots of income, then you should pay more tax. Okay. But if somebody, and here's the problem though, if you don't make a lot of income, let's say you're on a pretty humble salary environment, but you inherit something, they're trying not to tax that person painfully for inheriting an asset. So my suspicion is we get some kind of graduated capital gain scale that just adds about another 5%, maybe 6% on top of the current cap of 20%. So it goes up to 25, maybe 26%, and it's probably applied to people that make more than $1 million. I know I'm giving really specific numbers here. I reserve the right to be wrong. Nevertheless, if you look at the backdrop, it seems to me like, look, up to about, they seem to pick on right around 400,000.
Yeah.
And I would think that the next tier will be for a married couple. If you have a family income above 400,000, you hit the 20% capital gains like it already exists. But if you've got a joint family income over $1 million, now you're the evil rich people. And so that's when we're going to tack on another 5% on top, and we're going to get you there, and your income tax is going to be maxed out. And we're probably going to get rid of a whole bunch of other government tax credits and so forth for children or whatever else. Like, those all go away. You just don't qualify for anything. You know, you just pay full bore on everything. So that's what I think is likely to roll out.
See, and the reason for my pause here is I didn't want to come out and say it. I think they're going to roll it through. I think they're going to, what they've proposed, I think they're just going to slam us. I do. I think they're going to bring all of these capital gains taxes down the pike, and I think we're going to hurt.
So it'll be interesting to see.
All right. So you have Matt versus Matt versus David predictions here.
I think they're bringing it.
So yeah. I think they'll raise it, but I think they'll do it in modification. Because I think there's, again, you're looking for that middle ground, right? It's like, oh, we're going to go really extreme, and everybody's going to go, and then I think they're going to back it down a little bit, and something similar will be what's passed.
I hope they don't.
I think that it would be very destructive to real estate, and what it'll do is, and they're already saying, well, we're going to try to exempt the small family business or the family farm, and they'll fail, right? Because we're inflating the currency. And so the danger is that you will essentially kill small family businesses if you do that. And yeah. I think that is politically untenable, right? Because that's still the lion's share. There's lots more small businesses than S&P 500. So how do you kill off all of the small businesses that arguably still employ, 70-80% of the population?
Right.
But if you make it so that it can't have any generational transfer whatsoever because you're just going to tax it out of existence, then you create significant problems. So I think that they have some real challenges to tackle right now. And making a really radical tax overhaul without being incremental in nature probably creates unintended structural problems that could backfire.
Well,
like, it's a good way to get unelected.
Is it a permanent change, or is it like a change that's a temporary change for a certain amount of time with the sunset?
That has to do with how many votes they have to do something, right? The corporate tax rate was made permanent, but the personal tax rate was not with the last vote. So that's going to.
But so that's my other question. Like, is it a temporary thing, or is it a?
Well, now we're getting
we're deeper into the weeds.
Because we're getting into political theory, I think for our listeners, the question is more about, hey, how is this going to potentially affect me? So we just kind of laid out the landscape of this major tax proposal. So the next question then would be, how do we – well, there's another element to it that we need to talk about that we just barely touched on, and that is how would they treat the death tax? But they're going to make us take another break, right? So, oh, and there's the music, and I can actually hear it in the headphones this time. That's cool. So stick around, gang. We'll be right back. We're going to unpack a little bit more on this tax stuff, and we're going to do the best we can to make it interesting, but we got to take this obscene profit break first. So this is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show.
That's not going to hurt your frog in your throat, because like, you keep trying to pull that voice like down into the basement, and that usually makes you more froggy.
Anyways. Okay. So
and the death tax.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, welcome back to
the
show.
I'll just be the Grim Reaper with the sickle and the death tax.
I know, there's, you know, after a long break, those that are just tuning in are like, what? So
now you get to listen to the podcast and find out what the heck we're talking about.
So it's posted tomorrow, littlejohnfs.com under the Educate tab, and we got a whole history. This is sort of linked to the week, like last week's also. Like, so this week's this week's show is linked to last week's show. And we've been talking about how there's this tax proposal out there, and it's going to impact assets a lot potentially if there is a decision in D.C. to increase capital gains, basically to turn them into the same as ordinary income.
Right.
Right. And it's going to
increase short or long term capital gains, because isn't short term capital gains already income?
Yeah. In effect, it's just eliminate long term capital gains.
Right.
right? So just turn everything into income tax rates, right? Just to make the same brackets for both.
Yuck.
And just so we're all clear about this, the system would survive that, right? I mean, like, the system would survive. If we did it, it would reprice some things because, you know, real estate changes as an investment if you can't do things like tax deferral. And, you know, there's still some benefits the way you can depreciate and so forth too. But a lot of the reason depreciating real estate works well is because you're depreciating an asset and converting from an income tax to a capital gain tax. You're getting an arbitrage in the tax code.
Right.
Okay. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, well, that's what CPAs are for.
I was going to say, go read tax code because you want to sleep better.
Okay. So, but that's part of what makes this work so well for investors. If that goes away or if it's going to change, then it's going to change the calculations for how things get valued. And that's going to have an impact on, you know, lots of parts of the system. And it's going to mean that people make, they call them substitutions, right? This is economics 101.
Right.
Okay. If supply and demand are out of whack, the price gets too high on something, then people substitute, right? The classic example was, if steak's too expensive, then people buy hamburger, right? I mean, there is a point. And if hamburger's too expensive, people buy peanut butter or whatever it is. That's a substitution effect when the supply and demand imbalance doesn't work for somebody. So it will change the supply and demand curve for real estate if you change input variables for how you predict the price.
Right.
And taxes are one of those variables. Now, the bigger issue to me, I think, is the 1031. I think that's a really significant. I think the death tax and the 1031 deal are pretty big. And it's not the death tax itself. That's actually, it gets a lot of press. But the death tax doesn't touch that many people. It doesn't Oregon, right? Because, you know, Oregon has a death tax. And so there's the feds have a death tax.
Right. There's a federal limit and then there's a state limit. Yeah. And state limits are different.
The state limit for Oregon, which is where we're broadcasting from. So if you're listening online, check your local tax code, right? But in Oregon, I think it's $1 million for your household. And if you want $1 million per person, you have to do some estate work in order to make sure that you don't get that, what they call that exemption, combined for you and your spouse.
Right. So you can get up to $2 million for you and your spouse if you do it right.
It's not for you and your spouse is the interesting thing. And I'm not being semantic.
No, that's okay. That's, let's
literally
unpack it.
When you're married, you're a single tax filing unit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you're treated as a single unit. But with proper estate planning, you can use documents like even a will can do this, but a trust can certainly do it as well. Will then sort of break you apart in your death so that you each retain your $1 million tax exemption. So you can double the amount with proper planning from $1 million to $2 million in the state of Oregon for a married couple.
So do I have to talk to my husband about the fact that we're going to break up after we're dead? I don't know if he can take that. Just kidding, guys.
Yeah, you are.
I love you, Thomas.
It's going to be really awkward. It's true. The good news is you'll be dead.
You'll be dead. So, you know, we can just fight about it. And
it's like you're going to get the last word.
Sorry, the bell is not appropriate for that one. All right.
So, but the death tax is one of those, at a federal level, it's very high right now. It's like $11 million per person, actually higher than that. So $11.5 million each, I think. So very few couples have $23 million,
right.
Let alone more than that. So it doesn't touch very many people at a federal level. In Oregon, it touches a lot more people because with the asset inflation and housing and so forth in a retirement plan, it's not unreachable to have $2 million in assets when you die.
Well, and people forget about their life insurance too. Life insurance counts towards your assets.
That's the sneaky gotcha too, is if you own life insurance.
Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah.
See, I learned that too in one of our seminars.
Life insurance death benefits are included in your estate if you're the one that owns the policy. It's based on the owner, not the beneficiary.
Right.
It's a funky thing, right? But it's there. It's real.
So it's not too hard to hit that mark.
It's not
hard. Like a person that, if you go out and buy $1 million of life insurance and you have a house with some equity in it and a small retirement plan, you have over $1 million to your name.
And you're done.
And
so
if something happens to you.
Point for a variable annuity instead of like a whole life?
I don't think so.
No?
No.
So and I'll come right out and say it on the program here. I'm not a huge fan of variable annuities.
Okay.
And I will say this, though. That will change dramatically if the tax code goes to everything being income tax instead of capital gains. Because once you don't have a long-term capital gain, which is a significantly lower tax point, then the variable annuity becomes valuable as a tax deferral. So it will change the planning landscape if this law changes.
Ah.
So this really could trickle down into the insurance companies. And
absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it trickles.
Yeah, no, it touches lots of areas of the financial
There's lots
realm.
Of ripples that people are unaware of, right? It's not just a big stone that gets plunked in the center of the lake. It ripples all the way out to the
and
shore.
And it will, you know, we'll be really busy, right? If these changes occur from a planning perspective, we'll be having lots of meetings with clients and customers to retool strategically because we have to reoptimize all their taxes.
Well, when they changed the stretch benefit on like inherited IRAs right? And they said, okay, now we're no longer stretching it over your lifetime. We're going to do a 10-year limit. That changed how you guys are planning.
It did.
So, I mean, just that one little change.
And that was last year. That's in less than 12 months ago.
The conversations are different when it starts coming to your IRAs and who you're passing them to. So even that one little conversation, and we're talking about real estate, right? And the American dream is to own your own home.
So is this going to get into your traditional versus your Roth as well?
Not for this. Not for the real estate portion.
Well, it could a little bit because strategically now, the question then becomes, if we're at a really high present tax rate and we think future administrations may change that because politically it's not something you'd maintain, then you may see more benefit to getting the tax break up front with a traditional IRA as opposed to doing a Roth IRA where you're getting a tax break on the
back
end of it, right? So do you know, do you take the upfront tax break or do you take the tax break on the other end of it? There's some other planning reasons that Roths are attractive, but you know,
but we're not getting into those weeds today.
It's a very reasonable
question
that our listeners should be thinking about and planning. I mean, there's layers to strategy here. But let's go back to the death tax thing you talked about, Katie.
Okay.
So I don't think the death tax is the elephant in the room. I think it's the step up in basis.
Right. Because, I mean, if, you know, grandma bought the farm for $30,000 and it's now worth $3 million. I want to inherit it at $3 million. I don't want to inherit it at $30,000 when she bought it back in 1929.
Yeah, because you inherit an asset that now you, if you sell it, you're going to have to pay 40% of it to Uncle Sam, right? So that is no longer an asset that's worth $2.97 million of profit to you. It's an asset that's going to be worth, well, $1.2 million less than that.
Right.
So,
and that hurts. Like, who wants to give up $1 million?
So a $1.2 million tax for inheriting the farm, and if you don't keep it, as soon as you sell it, you get to pay the tax. So what it will also
It's worth over $1 million, so I'm taxed on it either way at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I can already tell you from a planning perspective, it'll just change behaviors. Because what you'll see people do if they're insurable, they will, all right, I'm going to sell an asset now. I'm going to do, or I'm going to donate it to a charity, but the charity's going to buy life insurance on me. And then when I die, that is going to go to my heirs. And
welcome to sophisticated tax planning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think
with your financial advisor, David Littlejohn.
I will give away the asset because you're going to give my heirs life insurance, death benefits, tax-free that exceed the value of the asset. Okay, I'm sidestepping taxes. And this is what sophisticated planning starts to get into is, and there's probably some tax elements that where you have to have an insurable interest, and there's, you know, going to be the IRS is going to scrutinize those things. So it's I'm oversimplifying on air. You can't just go do that because it's like, well, I heard this guy on the radio.
Yeah, so, and by the way, this is not financial advice for you. We're just talking about how the system works.
But we're saying when you want to get into the layers of planning, then you could say, oh, okay, well, it's, you know, grandma and grandpa own the home. We'll do a second to die life insurance policy, and then we can create an irrevocable trust and then hold it outside of the trust, gift assets out of the estate so that they're not taxed in the first place. And then we can replace assets using insurance strategies that pay out tax-free right now. We've just been able to substitute that asset or provide the cash to pay the tax so you can keep it. Right. So these are all more sophisticated.
Yeah, you just
strategies.
Use things that people were like, whoa, what? Irrevocable trust?
Yeah. So what you do is you hire somebody that's capable of doing advanced plan design for you.
And explaining it to you so that you understand how the plan works.
Yeah. And there's some of our listeners just went, I think I know it's a part of that. And then others of you just went, what?
Yeah. So, you heard their eye roll.
The fact of the matter is that it's not going to make the system any less complicated, and it's going to make it all new, and it's going to create all new advanced plan design issues. And then it's also going to create all new challenges with the IRS, where you're going to have to go and seek private letter rulings and other potential clarifications, because the implementation of this policy, that's where the devil is in those details.
Right.
It's like, oh, sure, let's just change it. Okay. Somebody just waved a wand. How are you going to do it?
True. Right. And wouldn't could. We always say wouldn't could, or, you know, shouldn't could, or not should always could. The same thing, right?
Yeah.
Can you do it? Sure. Should you do it? Maybe.
So regardless, what I'm here to tell you is that it will have an effect. I don't think it changes real estate as an attractive asset class. If your plan is to hold the real estate anyway, I think what's really attractive about real estate is that it's an income. You can still use leverage to buy it. I don't think it destroys the banking system. I don't think it does any of the things that some people will say is calamitous. I think it will really upset a lot of people, and I don't blame them, because it does seem sort of arbitrary to say, well, you know, I think it comes down to this, right? We have concentrated wealth in very few hands, but people tend to look at that and think, well, it's not fair that occurred, and so we should redistribute through taxes because capitalism's not working. And I disagree with that assessment, because I think when you look at the list of first-generation billionaires,
right,
there's lots of first-generation billionaires and not that many second- or third-generation billionaires.
Right.
It's all first-generation wealth from new creations. I mean, Amazon, you realize Amazon didn't exist 30 years ago?
I know.
Like, it wasn't there. And now... thought.
I'm a little crippled by how much I kind of rely on Amazon now. Like, it's when I started thinking about it, I'm like, it's pretty ridiculous.
Right. So you think about where that's going. And, I mean, we sit down and have some vision sessions about what's the future look like. And there's really interesting stuff. Like, you know, public transit may change if every vehicle is self-driving and every vehicle can be a taxi cab.
Right.
Right. Imagine if you purchasing a vehicle is kind of like owning something in a rental pool.
Yeah, it's like a ride share.
Yeah. What if Ford Motor Company doesn't sell cars to the public anymore? They just put them in motor pools all over the country, and Uber and Google Maps just routes everything around and smart routes traffic on the existing infrastructure. You would not need more roads and you would not need more public transit. You'd have cars that knew when they needed a charge that would go home and park themselves and charge. And the other cars would load balance in the existing infrastructure, and it would become illegal to drive in a city.
By the way, if I could not sit in the line to pick up my kids every day from school, I might kind of sign up for that.
But like, people have trouble imagining this because we see driving as an American right and freedom.
It's kind of fun to drive sometimes, though.
Well, it is. But to the next generation coming up, a lot of people are forgoing licenses in high-density urban areas. What's the point? So it would be totally easy to get them to say, well, yeah, I mean, if I had better options, I just click summon on my phone, a car shows up, it chirps and lets me know it's here, I get in and it takes me where I go, I get out and I leave. And to them, every vehicle is a taxi.
Right.
Like, imagine a world that looks like that. What companies are yet to be invented to work in that infrastructure?
True. And we've talked about even with like Teslas, right? Like, if you had an hour commute every day, and you didn't have to drive and you can actually focus on other things, like, how productive could you be if you reclaim that hour?
That's largely the point here. And I think it takes a while, but this is, you know, we have trouble filling trucking jobs right now, right?
True.
Just getting people that will be willing to show up, stay clean, and be on time, right? No insults to those of you out there that are getting that done right now. Thank you.
By the way,
right? That's awesome.
For those of you that continue to show up to work, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, for every industry, thank you.
Yeah. So, big deal. But that's the idea, is that, you know, if the trucking industry, if we can't get people that will show up to be able to drive, it's
well,
the
we talked about autonomous, right?
Right. Like, I mean, that's a huge happening. Concept. Well, it is. There's other regulatory challenges that we have to
hurdle
examine.
Over first.
Well, and safety.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and that's not like humans are particularly safe. It's funny. Statistically, it's not like we're awesome.
What?
Yeah. I know. Right. No, we're all above average drivers, right?
My favorite song, I Can't Drive 55. Okay, anyways.
Not my favorite song.
You know.
I've heard this song, not my favorite song.
It just came into my head.
So, all right, look, as we look forward, bottom line on all of this is, you know, when any time that there's major changes, it's going to create disruption, but it's also going to create opportunity. Okay. And I think that as investors, that should be the takeaway on this one, is that major disruption presents major opportunity. How do you capitalize on that opportunity?
Yeah. How are you poised for the change? Okay.
And so that's what I want to leave people with, is rather than being terrified by it, let's just be aware and we'll proceed, not just with caution, but with the mentality of abundance. Until next time, we're out of time. So, Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Yep, it was a pleasure.
Katie, thank you as well. How do they reach us if they need help?
541-375-0898.
All right, gang. Until next time, this has been Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shuck.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.